Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the U.S. deploys 130 additional military assessors to Iraq. CARE condemns the actions of the Islamic State group, or ISIS, in Iraq and Syria.
It seems that they're just committing the worst kinds of barbaric crimes against minority groups and other Muslims as well.
China and U.S. tensions rise over the South China Sea. Noting the plight of pachyderms for World Elephant Day, and legendary American actress Lauren Bacall has passed. It's all ahead. I'm Susan Yawkey. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says the United States has deployed another 130 military personnel to northern Iraq for threat assessment and humanitarian purposes, as the Islamic State group militants seek to expand their self-declared caliphate. VOA's Victor Beatty reports from Washington.
Hagel said the team of military advisors was deployed Tuesday to the area around Erbil to provide an in-depth assessment of the threat posed by Islamic State militants and the unfolding humanitarian crisis they have caused. A U.S. defense official speaking on condition of anonymity said the personnel include Marines and special forces tasked with assessing humanitarian assistance options for tens of thousands of minority Yazidis fleeing the Sunni Muslim extremists. The Associated Press says since the first deployment in June, U.S. force numbers now exceed 900 involved in various roles in Erbil and Baghdad. But Hagel Tuesday insisted there will be no return to the combat mission that ended in 2011 after 8 years.
It follows the criteria that President Obama has made very clearly, that this is not any extension of any role other than to find ways to assist and help advise the Iraqi security forces, which we have been doing. As the president has made very clear, we're not going back into Iraq in any of the same combat mission dimensions that we once were in. Very specifically, this is not a combat boots on the ground operation. We're not going to have that kind of operation.
RAND Corporation senior political scientist and career Army officer Rick Brennan expects more such personnel to be deployed, but does not see this buildup as a prelude to a future combat mission.
The political situation in Iraq really would not be conducive to putting U.S. boots back on the ground. But putting in some number of advisors to assist them in what they're trying to do, both on the humanitarian side and on the strategic side, or the trying to attack ISIL, is critical. I really do think, though, that what we totally lack at this point in Iraq is a strategy in terms of what we're trying to achieve. We haven't heard the president talk about destroying ISIL. ISIL is not only a threat in Iraq, but is also a threat to Syria, is a threat to Jordan, it's a threat to Lebanon, it has aspirations for Israel and Egypt. This is a threat that if the United States doesn't take a more forceful action against, with having a broad strategy for how we're going to work with our friends and partners in the region as well as our NATO allies, that this will come back and haunt us years from now.
The Pentagon Tuesday said it carried out a fifth airdrop of food and water to thousands of Iraqis threatened by the militants on Mount Sinjar. With the help of Kurdish forces, more than 20,000 of the refugees have managed to escape in the past few days. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called the plight of the Yazidis and others on Mount Sinjar dire.
And even when people manage to find a way out, they remain exposed to searing heat and perilous odyssey.
Meanwhile, Hagel told Marines at Camp Pendleton, California, the United States will continue to support Iraqis as they try to form a new government.
It needs to be a unity government that shares power, which was the intended purpose of the Constitution they wrote. That hasn't happened the last 5 years. And because of that, Iraq is in the kind of position it's in today, because that inclusive participatory government that should have been in place and should have brought together all the different factions of Iraq didn't occur.
International backing grew Tuesday for Iraqi Prime Minister-designate Haider al-Abadi, picked Monday to form a new government in Baghdad. The United States, NATO, Saudi Arabia, and Iran have voiced support for Mr. Abadi, weakening incumbent Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki's push to extend his 8-year rule to a third term. He is widely accused of failing to unite Iraq's various factions during his tenure. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Marie Harf on Tuesday said the United States would reject any effort to achieve a new government through coercion or manipulation of the constitutional or judicial process. She was asked if Washington is concerned Mr. Maliki may resist an orderly transition.
Today, Prime Minister Maliki said in remarks that the security forces should not get involved in this matter and should focus on defending the country. We'll see what happens going forward, but there's a process that's been playing out. We never thought it would be without complication. We never thought it would be easy, but there is a process that has hit the benchmarks. It's continued to move forward. And we'll listen to what he said today and go from here.
UN Chief Ban said it was imperative Iraq's security forces refrain from intervening in the political process. Brennan says the risk of security force intervention is real but diminishing. He says Mr. Maliki has handpicked senior officers loyal to him within the country's security forces.
But most specifically in the 6th Division, which also houses the commando units for the 54th and the 56th Brigades. The 56th Brigade was the old Baghdad Brigade that was accused of so many atrocities, and the counterterrorism forces, as well as the intelligence services. So those organizations in and around Baghdad are individuals who have personal loyalties to Maliki, and there's always a danger that he would be willing to use that military for his own political purposes. It appears today as if he may be walking away from that a little bit, and if he does, that's good news, but that is still a danger that needs to be watched very carefully.
Brennan says Mr. Abadi has an opening now to show he can bridge the deep political divisions among Iraqis. He says the next 2 to 3 weeks will be a crucial time for the prime minister-designate to try to reach a grand bargain among Shia, Sunni, and Kurdish members of parliament. He says if Mr. Abadi can create a coalition of perhaps 250 of the 328 parliamentarians, he could form a strong coalition government. Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
The Council on American-Islamic Relations is condemning the actions of the Islamic State group in Syria and Iraq, sometimes referred to as ISIS. CARE, as the Muslim Civil Rights and Advocacy Organization is commonly known, has issued a statement saying the behavior of ISIS is, quote, un-Islamic and morally repugnant. Ibrahim Hooper is a spokesman for CARE.
Some of these allegations against this group are so extreme and so barbaric, you even have to wonder. But it seems that they're just committing the worst kinds of barbaric crimes against minority groups and against other Muslims as well. So in no way can they be portrayed as representing mainstream Islamic thought or principles, and they just have to be rejected by Muslims worldwide.
What are some of the practices that you are referring to?
Targeting religious minorities, targeting Shia Muslims, blowing up churches, blowing up mosques, beheading people, taking women against their will. It's just unbelievable in its barbarity. And everyone, no matter what your faith, I think has to condemn it.
Is there anything ISIS is doing that you would support?
No, they claim to be establishing a caliphate. And the word caliphate has resonance with Muslims around the world. But any caliphate presupposes a system based on justice and freedom. And obviously, they're not creating a system based on justice or freedom.
What about the humanitarian efforts that are going on in these regions for civilians?
Well, we encourage any humanitarian efforts, just as we would encourage humanitarian efforts for Gaza or Central African Republic or Syria or Myanmar, the Muslim population there. We hope that all civilians who are suffering in similar circumstances receive aid. Now, the issue of bombing, that's another issue, and that should be dealt with separately.
What is your reaction to what the U.S. is doing in the region?
Well, unfortunately, our lack of action in support of freedom in the region has led to the rise of these extremist groups. If we had supported freedom for the people of Syria when they struggled peacefully to gain their freedom from a brutal dictator, you wouldn't even see groups like ISIS or Jabhat al-Nusra or any of these groups coming forward because the people of Syria would have been free. But our lack of action resulted in this unfortunate situation.
Ibrahim Hooper, the National Communications Director for the Council on American Islamic Relations. Chinese state media accused the United States of inflaming tensions in the South China Sea as U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry wraps up his trip to the region, during which the U.S. and China exchange verbal blows over the resource-rich waterway. Shannon Van Sant reports from Beijing.
Both China and the United States have lodged accusations over actions in the South China Sea, which is contested by China and several other Asian nations. China's state-run People's Daily newspaper said the United States was emboldening its Asian neighbors in claims to the waterway, which is rich in natural resources and one of the busiest shipping routes in Asia. The People's Daily, the mouthpiece of the Communist Party, said the U.S. position is making the Philippines confident of winning the South China Sea dispute. The China Daily newspaper said the United States is fishing in troubled waters and encouraging countries such as the Philippines and Vietnam to take blatant moves. Xiaohe Chang, a professor of international relations at Renmin University, says the South China Sea dispute is testing relations between China and the United States.
That's the bad signs of China and the United States relations, particularly when two countries try hard to build the so-called new type of major powers, major countries relations. And the rhetoricers in Washington and Beijing against each other has heated up.
This week, the United States accused China of fomenting instability in Asia through its aggressive actions and proposed a voluntary freeze on provocations in the region. China refused to abide by the freeze and says the United States' pivot to Asia is sowing instability. More than 1,000 U.S. Marines are stationed in Australia, and that number is expected to grow to 2,500 by 2017. Xiaohe Chang explains how China views the U.S. actions.
The United States just inked a new deal, new secure deals with Australians, and the United States is tend to establish permanent military base in Australians. And all the words and acts have been perceived by Chinese as some kind of move to contain China.
But China's growing influence in the region has sparked tensions with its neighbors, prompting prominent members of the Communist Party of Vietnam to write a letter to Vietnamese leaders calling for reforms to diminish the country's reliance on China. Earlier this year, the deployment of a $1 billion Chinese oil rig in the South China Sea in waters claimed by both countries sparked violent protests in Vietnam. Xiaohe Chang says tensions still remain.
I think it's too early to say the nightmares is over. But between China and Vietnam.
The U.S. State Department says it is calling for a de-escalation of tensions and the timely negotiation of a meaningful code of conduct for countries' actions in the South China Sea. China and ASEAN have been working on a code of conduct for more than a decade. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
China is a fascinating country.
With interesting people doing amazing things.
Every Friday, we focus attention on some of our favorite things coming out of China during the previous week.
It may be political, it may be cultural.
It may simply be a curiosity that caught our attention.
But we'll find stories sure to be of interest.
And then, of course, we'll add our own, American perspectives as well.
I'm Sarah Williams.
I'm Jim Stevenson.
Join us for China Focus every Friday at 12 hours Universal Time on VOA Radio.
And anytime on the web at voanews.com and on Facebook VOA Asia.
Tuesday was World Elephant Day. It's estimated there are 500,000 elephants remaining in Africa. That's down from 1.2 million in the 1980s, as poaching continues to take its toll. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
African Wildlife Foundation's Beatrice Karanja says World Elephant Day is an attempt to save an iconic animal.
What we hope to accomplish is to raise awareness to the plight of the elephants in Africa and the rate at which we're losing them, which is quite phenomenal. Africa lost 35,000 elephants last year, and it is predicted that if we continue on the trajectory that we are on now, we will see no elephants in the wild by 2025.
Speaking from Nairobi, Karanja says raising awareness about the plight of elephants begins at home.
Even here in Kenya, when you talk to general public, they are not aware of the rate at which we are losing them and the rate at which they could be extinct. So we are appealing to Kenyan brothers and sisters and our African brothers and sisters to take more of a cognizant role in calling for drastic changes in policy and legislative that can assure that we don't lose our iconic species.
Poaching is fueled by the demand for ivory, primarily in Asia. It's used in traditional medicine and as a status symbol.
Poaching has become almost militarized in that the poachers are using high-caliber weapons, sophisticated tools for tracking, whether it's GPSs or night vision goggles, etc. So it's a challenge when you've got a ranger who doesn't have that same equipment to fight against the poachers. We need more boots on the ground, and we need stronger legislative policies and laws.
Karanja says the elephant awareness campaign also needs the will and commitment of African governments. Anti-poaching efforts do work. For example, foot and aerial patrols have reduced poaching by 50% in the Lower Zambezi National Park in Zambia. About 2,200 elephants live in the park. And thanks to anti-poaching efforts, the elephant population is reported on the rise in southern Kenya's Amboseli ecosystem. President Obama recently issued an executive order to launch a $10 million anti-poaching initiative. A task force will allocate the money to African countries and help develop a U.S. strategy against wildlife trafficking. Recently, two U.S. states, New York and New Jersey, passed laws banning the sale and purchase of ivory products. On August 9th, at Brookhouse School in Karen, Kenya, a celebration was held in honor of the African elephant. Karanja says it's important to get children involved in efforts to save the animal.
We do want to speak to them because we will be handing the baton of guardianship of the wildlands and of the wildlife to them. So it is important that they get involved early enough and they understand what the issues are.
While August 12th is World Elephant Day, conservationists are also raising awareness about the rhino. In South Africa, home to most of Africa's rhinos, more than 1,000 were killed last year. South Africa plans to evacuate hundreds of rhinos from the Kruger National Park to safer locations. The rhinos have been targets of poachers even within the park's boundaries. Officials say as many as 500 rhinos could be relocated to other parks and communal areas. Neighboring countries may also serve as safe havens. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Law enforcement authorities say American actor comedian Robin Williams committed suicide by hanging himself at his California home. The local assistant deputy chief coroner, Lieutenant Keith Boyd, spoke with reporters Tuesday about 24 hours after Williams was discovered.
On August 11th, 2014, at approximately 11:55 a.m., Marin County Communications received a 911 telephone call reporting that a male adult had been located unconscious and not breathing inside his residence located at 95 St. Thomas Way in unincorporated Tiburon, California. The caller was distraught and indicated at that time that was an apparent suicide due to a hanging had taken place and that rigor mortis had set in. The Sheriff's Office, as well as representatives of the Tiburon Fire Department and Southern Marin Fire Protection District, were dispatched to the incident with emergency personnel arriving on scene at 12 p.m. The male subject, who was pronounced deceased by firefighters from the Tiburon Fire Department at 12:02 p.m., has been identified as Robin McLaurin Williams.
The 63-year-old Williams was reported last seen alive at his home Sunday night. A statement from his publicist said Williams had been battling depression. His longtime struggle with drugs and alcohol also was widely known. Dr. Jay Singh is a Washington-based expert on suicide and also a clinical associate at Yale School of Medicine. He specializes in treatment of depression and bipolar disorder. Dr. Singh tells VOA it's very important to look at the positives coming out of Robin Williams' suicide.
I think there's a few positive points here. I think the one thing that it really does for us is it really humanizes the struggle that so many Americans have when it comes to the issue of depression or bipolar disorder. Approximately one in every 10 Americans at some point in their life will be diagnosed with this illness, and approximately 3 in 100 will be diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So this is something where so many people these days have been either personally affected by one of these mental illnesses, or they have a friend or a loved one who has. It's also important, I think, as a takeaway message, to know at the end of the day what we're dealing with here is really biological illnesses. And just as we wouldn't blame someone who's diagnosed with cancer or with heart problems, we wouldn't place blame on them and say that they're weak per se by any means. It should be the same thing when it comes to something like depression or bipolar disorder. There's certainly a great deal of stigma there. And seeing that one of our heroes, one of our icons here in the States, like Robin Williams, can be suffering from such an illness, I think it's something where it really puts a loving, friendly, and kind face on an illness that impacts so many of us.
Dr. Jay Singh is a Washington-based expert on suicide and a clinical associate at Yale School of Medicine. He specializes in treatment of depression and bipolar disorder. During his decades-long career in television and movies, Robin Williams entertained fans of all ages. He won acclaim for numerous films, including Mrs. Doubtfire, Good Morning Vietnam, and Good Will Hunting, which earned him the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor in 1998. Born in Chicago in 1951, Williams was a stand-up comedian when he made his television hit in the late 1970s, playing an alien in the situation comedy Mork and Mindy. He also acted on Broadway and continued performing stand-up comedy even after becoming a movie star, delighting audiences with his rapid-fire improvisational routines. In addition to his wife, William is survived by his 3 adult children. Legendary American actress Lauren Bacall, the one-time model who became an overnight film star working opposite her eventual husband Humphrey Bogart, has died at the age of 89. Bacall captivated audiences from the moment she burst into films in the 1940s. She was just 20 years old when she played opposite Bogart in the film To Have and Have Not.
You know, Steve, you're not very hard to figure. Only at times. Sometimes I know exactly what you're going to say. Most of the time. The other times, you're just a stinker.
What'd you do that for?
Wondering whether I'd like it.
What's the decision?
I don't know yet. It's even better when you help. Sure you won't change your mind about this?
Uh-huh.
This belongs to me and so do my lips. I don't see any difference.
Oh, I do.
Okay. You know you don't have to act with me, Steve. You don't have to say anything and you don't have to do anything. Not a thing. Oh, maybe just whistle. You know how to whistle, don't you, Steve? You just put your lips together and blow.
Bacall's family said she died after a massive stroke at her New York City home Tuesday morning. In 1999, the American Film Institute named Bacall 20th on its list of the top 25 actresses of all time. She was married to Bogart from 1945 until his death in 1957. They had 2 children. She later had a well-publicized affair with Frank Sinatra and a turbulent marriage to actor Jason Robards. In her later years, Bacall won 2 Best Actress Tony Awards for her work on the stage. In 2009, she was awarded an honorary Oscar by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Thank you for joining us today for International Edition. Reporting to you from Washington, I'm Susan Yawkey.
This is Today in History. On this day in 1521, the remnants of the Aztec army, weakened by European diseases and a lack of supplies, surrendered to Japanese conquistador Hernando Cortes. The capitulation brought the Aztec Empire, located in present-day Mexico, to an end and gave Cortes control over a vast territory that became known as New Spain. On this day in 1792, King Louis XVI of France, already in custody, was formally arrested by the rebel National Tribunal and declared an enemy of the people. On this date in 1899, movie maker Alfred Hitchcock was born in London. Hitchcock's innovative directing techniques and mastery of suspense made him one of the most popular filmmakers of the 20th century. He began his film directing career in Britain, but received international acclaim for his Hollywood productions with such titles as Suspicion, Dial M for Murder, North by Northwest, and The Birds. Hitchcock died in 1980. In 1954, on this date, Radio Pakistan broadcast the national anthem of Pakistan for the very first time. In 1961, communist-ruled East Germany closed the border and built a wall between East and West Berlin to halt the exodus of its people to the West. The Berlin Wall became a symbol of repression by communist regimes during the Cold War. In 1964, murderers Peter Allen and Gwen Evans were hanged, becoming the last people executed in the United Kingdom. That's it for today. I'm Dave DeForest with Today in History.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The first challenge is to grow African democracy, U.S. permanent representative to the United Nations Ambassador Samantha Power said recently as she laid out two challenges to the young Africans gathered at the Young African Leaders Initiative in Washington, D.C. Democracy is about more than just holding an occasional election, Ambassador Power said. Democracy means government that respects the will and the rights of its people, like the right to speak one's mind without fear or the right to gather with others to share ideas. Democracy means building the capable, independent institutions that can help defend human rights when they are threatened, such as impartial courts, accountable police forces, and strong parliaments. In 1990, there were only 4 electoral democracies in sub-Saharan Africa. Today, there are 19. The second challenge, Ambassador Power noted, was to improve Africa's stability and security. Africa, she said, is also in the midst of phenomenal economic growth, adding that more needs to be done to ensure equal access to the expanding opportunities that growth offers. One major impediment to inclusive growth is conflict. To address the problems of conflicts and groups like Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab that are terrorizing civilians across the region, Ambassador Power argued that Africa needs better trained, better equipped, and more professional military and police forces. I make this argument as a longtime human rights advocate, Ambassador Power said, because it is hard to imagine lasting peace without rights-respecting, professional security and police forces being part of the solution. History hinges on the women and men who faced down their deepest doubts in those lonely places and walked out of them more determined than ever, Ambassador said, as she urged the young African leaders to tackle the two challenges facing Africa. That is how change is made. You are going to go out there and make it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.